Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
In times of tyranny, always comes one to right the wrong and wrong the unrighteous. Such a one was Zorro. It's an all-new, all-nude, lewd and lascivious Zorro. It's Entertainment Ventures' masterwork of adult exposition, The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. No kiddie matinee Zorro this. Here is a Zorro with balls.
What will you do next?
Next, I am getting laid.
The intrepid team that brought you Trader Horny now brings you a fantastic motion picture with something for everyone. Killing. Rape. Spectacle. Comedy. Sex. Flamenco dancing. Perversion. Horseback riding. Torture. Lesbians. Sword fighting. Naked girls. Entertainment. All in the audacious, outrageous, The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. Parental guidance recommended. Have your parents guide you to this theater to see The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. The first adult movie rated Z.
I was going to say that we get an astonishing amount of requests for the Erotic Adventures of Zorro trailer, but it's really not that astonishing, because it's awesome. It really is distilled pure greatness in a great-shaped container. That's the Erotic Adventures of Zorro. In an alternate life, I am that guy. Maybe in this one, depending how this gig works out. That'll be my future.
You're Erotic Zorro?
No, I'm not. Oh, only in my dreams, Don. No, the announcer, an all-nude, lewd, and lascivious Zorro. You sort of, you know, a Zorro with balls. I feel like I could be that guy. I really missed my, I was born too late, because I really, really missed the era in which I could have been, some sort of marquee porn film announcer. You know, this sort of, they give a little bit of a, to class up the joint, when they're advertising some new, erotic picture.
I'm just going to be sitting over here imagining you dressed up as Erotic Zorro.
Please don't do that. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It is 18 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of August of the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of quality. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Thank you for being there. Let me activate the telephone here. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. It is via that telephone later on today that we are going to be talking to Ben Steinbauer. And you may or may not know Ben Steinbauer. You may probably don't know his name. You may or may not have heard about the documentary he's making. But if you spend any amount of time on the internet, you have undoubtedly seen the thing about which the documentary is made. You have seen the focus of the documentary. There is a, and I'm going to post this on my Facebook page and on RickEmerson.com here in just a few. But there's a series of sort of viral videos that have gone around, and it's this guy named Jack Rebney. And Jack Rebney is alias the Angry Winnebago Salesman. And I will post those here in just a second so that you can experience the glory of the man. There is no way to post a safe-for-work version of them. I mean, it would just be ridiculous to do so. I thought about actually playing a bleeped version. But I mean, really, why would I want to do that? Dawn, you have that look on your face like you're about to say something.
We are getting some input that the volume is low and there's static. and I've gotten several of those remarks.
All right, the volume is low where? On the mobile stream or on the Live 365 stream?
Cheryl says she can barely hear you, and a couple of people saying that they have to turn their speakers way up to get any volume, and that there's some static noise.
But if they said what they're listening to? In other words,
Live stream.
All right, so not the mobile stream, probably.
No.
All right, let's see. Let me adjust the levels here. We'll see if that's. Let me adjust things and see if that actually makes any difference. All right. One of the reasons for that is this is one of those things where I have solved one problem and then just caused another one. Which is sort of my raison d'être. It's what I do. So it's going to take that a second probably to register. Let me see if I can adjust these a little bit more here. So there's some. So I can bring balance not just to the force, but actually to the actually to the sound levels. All right, and wait, no. All right, how about that?
I believe that is that seems to be better.
All right, there we go. So here's the reason. By the way, in case you were wondering why the levels sound maybe a little wonkified, the reason for that is that up until
Cheryl says it's still too soft.
Is it just me, or is it the actual?
All right, hold on a second.
I'm getting these very helpful input messages. Like it sounds weird.
Yeah, thanks so much. All right, let me see if I can actually just take care of this. Hold on one second. Now I apologize if I deafen everybody here, because again I realize I'm speaking to the delayed podcast audience as well. So just Rick Emerson apologizes in advance. Hold on a second. All right.
Now, apparently we sound muffled.
Yeah, well, you know, your mom sounds muffled. All right, hold on a second. All right.
I'm going to try that right there. All right. So we're going to see how that works out. All right. We're going to try this right now at this very moment and actually see how this functions. I'm going to do this actually sans anything else. Let me see if I can just turn this up here, and we'll see how that works. All right. So I'm going to drop this just a bit. All right, so right now, this is me. This is the party to whom you are speaking. As of this very moment, I am testing it with a different setting altogether. Is there any sort of verdict?
Well,
from the,
one person says that's better.
All right.
Let's see what else we got here.
Somebody else just typing first?
Apparently, yeah, first.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes, it seems to be better.
All right.
Yes, we have corrected our issue.
All right. Well, I have no idea.
Somebody wants a 3-cent refund.
Yeah, all right. I'll just add
that to the list of things I have to do today after, I don't know, creating hours of entertainment. Hold on a second. Let me just start this over again, and there we go. All right. I don't even know what we were doing now. All I know is I was playing the Erotic Adventures of Zorro trailer, and all was right with the world, and I was happy with my place in that world. And things were going swimmingly, and then suddenly that all stopped. All right, what should we do now, Dawn? I know. Let's just do this. Let me just.
We can run a little bit long today, though, because Sarah and Greg have already recorded their show.
Hold on a second. Let me just back up one second here, and we'll just. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The lead agency investigating the disappearance of 7-year-old Kyron Horman said it will release details this week in an effort to gather more information from the public. Multnomah County spokeswoman Lieutenant Mary Lindstrand said the sheriff's office will hold a news conference at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Brooks Hill Historical Church in Northwest Portland.
Is this a news conference where all the burning questions are finally going to be answered and all the information they've been holding back will be released in one glorious deluge, and everyone will be happy because the T's will be crossed, the I's will be dotted, and little Kyron will be brought out at the end like some sort of a last-moment Steve Jobs revelation?
What do you think?
No, I'm guessing that's actually not going to be the case.
Yeah.
Well, all right, fair enough.
They're not going to say anything.
No, they're not. So we just to do a little bit of a recap on what we were going to talk about at the beginning of the show. So I will edit all this down later on in podcast form so we don't have a whole lot of redundancy. Coming up today, we have a Penis Watch, Nazi Watch. We'll be counting down the top 5 absurdly cheerful songs found on my iPod. The top 5 absurdly cheerful songs found on my MP3 player. We'll also be talking to Ben Steinbauer. And so Ben Steinbauer, and you've seen the Winnebago Man the video, right?
I've seen some of the YouTube videos and the compilation. I haven't seen the documentary about
They're just fantastic. And actually, at this very moment, I'm going to Facebook, and I'm going to post these so that everybody can sort of see the glory that we are talking about. It is effectively a bunch of outtakes from a Winnebago infomercial. And I guess they were just filming it. It seems like it was somewhere down south, but I don't really know. Filming this infomercial for a Winnebago, I would imagine maybe in the late 80s, early 90s, on what looked to be an insanely hot day. And this guy who looks a little bit like Terry O'Quinn, who was Locke on Lost, and he was the stepfather. He was the titular the stepfather in that movie, where he just becomes progressively more irritated because he keeps blowing his lines and he keeps forgetting what his next line is supposed to be and he can't get a take done. And the camera guy is following him, and this is a real thing. This is back before the internet. These things were, I think, excerpted by irritated crew members and then passed around hand to hand and then dubbed VHS to VHS. And so over the years, just all of these outtakes from this Winnebago commercial got passed around from one sort of television crew to another, and they became legendary. And then when the internet happened, I mean, it's the sort of thing the internet was really made for. And it just suddenly became a thing that every single person on Earth had to tell everybody about. And I first saw them at the Found Footage Festival, which comes to town every single year, where they just, you know, as the title indicates, they just show a bunch of films that have been discovered at yard sales or garage sales or in the bottom of somebody's footlocker when they give it to Goodwill or whatever. And one of the biggest successes they've ever had at the Found Footage Festival is showing this stuff from this Winnebago salesman, Jack Rebney. So somebody became fascinated with who is this guy and what is the story behind this and how did this footage even come to exist and did the commercial even ever get filmed? And there is an entire documentary about it called Winnebago Man, which is going to be at Cinema 21, I think, through Thursday. I think it's tonight, Wednesday and Thursday. And we're going to talk to the director of that film here in just a short order. So that's coming up as well. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
People who bought pink shrimp at some Oregon stores are reporting that it glows in the dark. Don't worry, experts tell the Registered Guard in Newport, Oregon. They say it's due to certain marine bacteria that can cause shrimp and other seafood to appear luminescent. It's not a health risk and does not indicate mishandling during processing. Specialists at Oregon State University's Sea Grant Extension say the bacteria can grow at refrigerator temperatures, especially on seafood products where salt was added during processing. So if your shrimp is glowing, don't worry about it.
Well, that's like one of those things where they talk about the flamingos, which are really not supposed to be pink. Flamingos are actually white normally. And, you know, they couldn't figure out at one point why flamingos kept turning pink. And, of course, it's because they ingest massive amounts of shrimp that dye their feathers or some crap.
Except that's not actually true.
Well, what is the actual reason then? I'm just bluffing, by the way, while I try to fill in this. I try to post this thing on Facebook.
Damn, I'm not sure what the actual answer is at the moment, but I just recently heard something recently. I recently heard something recently that the shrimp thing is a fallacy. It's not actually why they're pink.
Whatever you're saying, I'm sure it's correct.
Yeah, okay.
All right, and there we go. All right, and okay, so I'm getting ready to post the link to the Winnebago Man thing. I should probably note that this is not safe for work, but it is awesome, by the way. All right, so there we go. Attach and posted. This is a good time, actually, to reference an email that I got last night. Let's see. This email came at, maybe about midnight. And this is somebody who knows full well how to get my attention, because the subject line of this email is Scarlett Johansson topless. And then the first line of the email is, "Hey, Rick, it's hilarious that you're actually reading this email, since I don't even really know how to spell Scarlett Johansson. Anyway..." And then he's lamenting that he can't add me as an Xbox friend because I guess my friends list is full or something. And he says, you know, "I'm a paying customer and I demand, he says, I demand to whatever degree 32 cents a day entitles me to demand that you make me an Xbox friend. P.S. Dawn Taylor makes S up all the time and passes it off to you as fact. You should be suspicious to the point of outright hostility. Also, it's funnier that way." So there you go. Let's see. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program, whoever it is that might be calling me. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. Oh, bastard. You know, what kind of a person calls and then goes on to hold and then hangs up exactly as I pick up the phone? God almighty. All right, if you go to Facebook right now, facebook.com/Rick Emerson, you'll be able to see the original Winnebago Man footage. It really is just one of the most astoundingly awesome things that you will ever experience in your life. And the full documentary behind the making of that commercial is at Cinema 21 tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday. We're going to interview the director of that here in just a bit. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A New York Mets fan is filing suit against Major League Baseball, the New York Mets, a bat maker, Mets second baseman Luis Castillo, and ex-Met Ramon Castro after his face was shattered by a broken bat during an August 2007 game. James G. Falson is seeking unspecified damages in a lawsuit filed Friday in Manhattan. Falson is suing Jardin Corporation, owner of bat manufacturer Rawlings, saying that the barrel of a maple bat became a dangerous projectile because maple bats have a reputation for exploding in various pieces when they break.
I don't want to hear about anything that has to do with anybody's face being shattered. Let's see. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. How can I help you on this fine Tuesday? This is awesome. This is you. You're being spoken to right now. This is you being addressed by me, Rick Emerson. At this moment.
Hello.
Hey. Hello.
Sorry,
hi.
I called before.
Yes. Yes. Hello. Hi. How is it? How can I help you on this Tuesday, sir?
I called a moment ago, but I thought I saw a cop, so I had to hang up.
Okay. I wondered why that is, because there are two traditions on the show. Actually, there are three phone-based traditions on the show. One is me, answering the phone and somebody saying, "Is this me?" The second is somebody saying one more thing and then just hanging up. And the third is somebody calling, waiting on hold, and then going click, and undoubtedly cackling to themselves in glee at my annoyance. I'm glad to hear that yours was at least caused by the presence of a law enforcement officer. To whom am I speaking today?
This is John. I sent you an email, actually, today about your Xbox Live handle and how your account is full.
Wait a minute. Are you the are you the guy whose email I just read on the air where you said that Dawn Taylor makes stuff up to the and passes it off as fact and that I should challenge her to the point of hostility?
Hey, that's me. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm not listening live.
I had actually just read that. I just moments ago read that email. So what prompted you,
sir? You are my enemy.
You're just making that up. See, it's not true. What? So you emailed me because I didn't even know an Xbox Live Friends account could fill up. What is the maximum number of friends you're allowed to have? Does anybody know?
Oh, I have no idea. You're like the second person I tried to add, and it was like, oh, it's full.
Dawn, any notion about the maximum number of friends on Xbox?
Not a clue.
All right.
I could just make something up.
Well, see, but apparently
but
you would.
You should.
What prompted you to make the observation that Dawn makes stuff up and passes it off as fact, sir?
The whole talk about, hormones and fat levels and, which you said, phytohormones, which I think is just a complete load.
This is when we were talking about the age of onset of puberty being lowered, and I said, but it said that their periods were not coming earlier. And I said, well, if their periods aren't coming earlier, what do they mean? And you went, well, they're bigger in the breast area. And it just came down to, they were fatter, basically. But Dawn was trying to pass it off as being, a hormone adjustment, I think, is what you claimed, that there was some sort of hormone. And you said, and all plants have hormones, which affect your hormones, which is the sort of thing that I just believed instinctively because I have no evidence to the contrary. But you're saying, sir, that
I remember now.
You're saying that
You're
saying I'm being sold a bill of goods, though.
Well, as you just told that story, I remember the exact thing that that tipped me off, which was when Dawn said, multiple studies have shown that blah, blah, blah. And then she just said, oh, but there are contradictory studies, just as many.
So this is...
I don't read studies. You don't read studies. Dawn doesn't read. No one reads studies. Ever, ever.
Here's the thing. That I absolutely believe to be true. Without any further investigation, I believe that is true. Because everybody says that. Well, there was a study recently that said, and I do that too, as though I've read it. Like the Journal of the American Medical Association is sending stuff to my house or whatever.
Yes, to be literal, you should say, I have read articles that have said that there are studies.
I think he's saying that one can just wheel that out, and it becomes then this sort of Potemkin evidence that can't really be adequately disproved. I'm with you, sir. I'm picking up what you're laying down.
I think he's just trying to sprinkle seeds of discontent.
I don't really know that that's necessary at this point. I think that might be that tree has already been pulped, I think. I'll tell you what, I will... Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just almost got in a car accident and killed myself.
I describe the president as a benign pragmatist. And I tell you, there's no such thing as...
And then my girlfriend turned on the radio extremely loud. No, but I almost got in a car accident and died, so I'm going to ask my question and then get off. But I just wanted to know what the big history was with the Alexakis fiasco, because that always sounded fascinating, and you always failed to elaborate on what exactly happened.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I will answer this when you get a moment. Listen to the show or listen to the archive or the stream or whatever, and you'll hear the answer to this. But in the meantime, just because you were so unbelievably entertaining and sent me something that was subject lined Scarlett Johansson nude photos, which is at least different from Britney Spears photos followed by a picture of a giant spider of some kind. I will go home and I will remove someone else from my Xbox friends list so that you may be added, sir.
Excellent. Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. All right, there you go. That's,
all right, have a lovely day.
All right. So, see, all of the technical jib-jabbery that was happening early on, it was all worth it just to get to that point in the show today. And the fact that I thought the phone was malfunctioning on top of everything else, and it turned out it was just a cop. And then, you know, and I certainly don't want you to, I certainly don't want you to be killed. Just for this dumb show, sir. That is just not a thing you could do. Oh, get that look off your face, like he's just like he's come up there and whizzed in your cornflakes or something. For the love
of
God!
Just because I say something that he's never heard of before doesn't mean I'm making it up.
I think his point, which is not without merit, by the way, is that just because you say something that turns out to be correct doesn't mean you knew definitively that it was correct when you said it. I think what he's suggesting and what I believe to be true is that you are sometimes, and I do this as well, but we're not talking about Rick Emerson's faults right now. We're talking about the many flaws of Don Taylor. I think he is suggesting that you sometimes are just sort of throwing darts in the dark, and that if you are correct, that there is a study that supports your point of view, that's just a coincidence. And you didn't really know that when you said it. It just turns out to actually be true, whether or not you knew it to be true in advance. Don Taylor in the back.
But couldn't you say that of anyone, really?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not exempting myself. I do the same thing. And I certainly get my my share of lumps on this program. So,
anyone who is sharing information that they have read elsewhere, you know, if you aren't the scientist who actually did the experiment.
But that's not what he's saying. He's not saying that. He's not saying that you read a study at home earlier this morning in which the New York Times is talking about something that MIT discovered. And then, you know, and you just don't remember the whole thing. And so you're just sort of reciting it from memory. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that you believe something to be true. And when I say, well, that sounds like a load of garbage. And you say, multiple studies have confirmed that you're just making that up, that you're just pulling that out of your ass, and that if indeed multiple studies do support that, that's separate from the fact that you're saying it. Like, you don't know that to be true, that you're just bluffing at multiple studies supporting your point of view.
But in the case of talking about the soy thing, I was not. I have read a number of articles that have cited various studies in which they believe that the results show that hormones from soy are affecting the advance of puberty.
I don't even
in
care
girls.
About soy. That's the whole bizarre thing. We're now where we're some sort of linguistic Mexican standoff where we're just never going to get it. We're at a push. All right. Well, here's the thing. So in any moment, this guy Ben Steinbauer, who's the director of Winnebago Man, is going to be calling. So we'll have to get to him here in just a few. That movie, by the way, which you really I haven't seen it. I haven't seen anything except the actual raw material on which the movie is based. I'm telling you right now, you got to go. You got to go see it. You got to go tonight, tomorrow, or Thursday at Cinema 21. A, because Cinema 21 is a fantastic place, and it really needs your support. And B, just... I think this is the guy. B, just the actual story and the actual footage is so unbelievable that you really owe it to yourself. This is the Rick Emerson radio program here on the Emerson News Network. And unless I miss my guess, and it's always possible that I am, in which case this is all going to be very awkward, I do believe we are welcoming down to the Rick Emerson Show Mr. Ben Steinbauer. Ben, is that you?
That's right. Wow, I'm impressed. Straight onto the radio. That's
well, great. It's a little bit of prestidigitative ability that I have that I can just suss out the. I looked at the caller ID. It just has your whole number on it.
Oh, great. I could produce some Jack Redney style moments, maybe, if you got that wrong, you know, some swearing on one end or something.
I was just going to say that we're a family friendly program here in the sense that we don't work blue. But I will say that for anybody who can just find can carve out like 5 minutes of time at their workplace or at their office where they can just sort of get off into a corner or look at something on their iPhone or whatever, I have posted at our Facebook page, which is just Facebook.com/RickEmerson, the actual the raw footage from this Winnebago infomercial, this commercial that they were trying to film some years back, And as the day goes on, it's just this guy, this sales guy, Jack Rebney, just becomes more and more frustrated at his inability to get even a single take down. And he just becomes incredibly profane and hilariously so. And that has been passed around from person to person and film enthusiast to film enthusiast for years. And by total absolute coincidence, I discovered that there was a documentary about it, and I went, my God, that sounds fascinating. And so I went and I Googled the name of the documentary, which is Winnebago Man, and then just like a jillion to one shot that it's actually playing in Portland this week. So it makes me look way more smarter and prepared than I really am. It was just all one big crapshoot. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, just have I got the backstory right that he's filming the Winnebago commercial? It's a hot day. He keeps screwing up his lines and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's 1988. He's filming an infomercial sales video that goes out to salesmen to show them how to sell the 89 model Winnebago. And he's filming it in Iowa. It's the middle of the summer. It's 100 degrees or about 100 million flies. The humidity is about 98%. And he's this 6'6" guy crammed into this RV that he's needing to sell ebulliently to the audience, and hilarity definitely ensues. And the crew, I think, realized what was happening and left the cameras rolling and collected all of these moments of frustration. And then once the shoot was over, they made a sort of a greatest hits that was an inside joke amongst themselves and passed them out. And they were so funny that we're now talking about them 22 years later.
And this is one of those things that gets, as you said, in the pre-internet days, is just sort of passed from crew member to crew member. And this is something, a similar thing happened with a newscaster named Jessica Savage some years back in New York, where she was, I believe, had a bit of a cocaine problem and was known to be a little bit of a prima donna and would throw these tantrums. And somebody at one point got a closed caption. They left the camera rolling and they got this feed of her throwing a temper tantrum. And they merged it together with like that Wicked Witch of the West music from Wizard of Oz. And it just made its way from coast to coast sort of virally. When did you first see the footage? When was your first experience with that?
Well, I was handed a VHS tape in 2001, and it was after a couple drinks, and it's kind of one of those things where it's like your buddy gives you a bootleg of your favorite band or something, you know, and that's how this was passed around, this sort of, you're not going to believe what I have here, and sure enough, you sort of can't believe it, for those of you who have seen it. It's so funny, it seems scripted, but then it also seems like this sort of rare artifact from, you know, a bygone era, like something you're not really supposed to be seeing. And it's just infectious. And so it was passed hand to hand like that on VHS tape until 2005, when video sharing technology made it possible for sites like YouTube to come along. And once it was uploaded to those, you know, we count somewhere around 20 million people now have seen it all over the world.
And so
really caught fire.
How did you track him down? How did you locate? Because part of the trailer, and people can go to Winnebago Man, spelled just like it sounds, W-I-N-N-E-B-A-G-O, Man, WinnebagoMan.com. And there's a Safe for Work trailer on the net. People can watch it without subjecting themselves to the risk of, you know, the profanity in the workplace and whatever. So there's a Safe for Work trailer. But part of it is, in the trailer, is an answering machine message from Jack Rebney where he's actually saying, I don't understand why anybody would be curious about me or want to talk to me or something like that. How did you track him down?
Well, that's part of the first section of the movie. And essentially what happened is I traced my VHS copy all the way back to the crew that put it together. And even they have not seen him. And so it becomes this almost search for Bigfoot in a way, this legendary figure that nobody has heard from since this taping. And so I ultimately hire a private investigator to help me track him down, and we find Jack Rebney living as a hermit on top of a mountain in Northern California where he has been for the last 15 years, and he had no inkling that these outtakes existed or they were as popular as they are.
That is awesome. And I mean, even having told us sort of what has become of him, it doesn't dim my anticipation for this movie at all, because I am fascinated, and friends of mine and former friends of mine have heard me drone on endlessly about the hidden histories of things. And that is one of my overwhelming obsessions in this life, is the backstory behind shared cultural experiences or phenomena. And this is like right
Absolutely.
Near the top of the heap. It really is. What has the reaction been, from I was going to say critics, but I mean just from people about this film? Like, is the film getting good reviews? Are people digging it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been playing the film all over the world. So we premiered here in Austin, Texas, where I live, in South by Southwest 2009, which is a big film festival. And from there, went to New Zealand and Australia and all over Western Europe and Canada and South America. And we have sold the rights to TV stations in all those countries and then some. And we're right now in the middle of our theatrical run in the United States, so we've played somewhere around 40 cities with about 100 more to go. And you can find all the screening information at winnebagoman.com and see where we've been and where we're going. And then we also got a theatrical release deal in Canada, so people in Canada will be able to see it in movie theaters soon. And Michael Moore has been a big champion of the film. Roger Ebert, we were on The Tonight Show, for Christ's sake. I mean, it's just been one of these things that has kind of exploded, and it's been a hell of a ride. So.
Excellent. Well, God bless you, my friend, because it is one of those things where it's like it's like the Loch Ness Monster, the Kennedy assassination or something, where you just go back to it over and over again and going, yeah, but what is the actual deal? Like, what really happened? What is the genuine story there? And just to know the reality behind something that, I mean, I think I about whizzed myself the first time I watched it. I mean, it was just so unbelievable. I saw it as part of the Found Footage Festival when it came to town, and it was, you
sure,
know,
yeah.
Every now and again, those guys will fold in something that is not found footage, that it's scripted, and I thought, maybe this is scripted. This can't be real. And then it turned out that it was real, and that there was this whole online fixation and fascination with this guy. So, well done. And I mean, congratulations. And I'm going to see it. It's playing at Cinema 21 right here in Portland tonight, Wednesday, and Thursday. So it ends Thursday night. So that's your last chance. You got to see it tonight, Wednesday, or Thursday at Cinema 21 right here in Portland. If you want to find out more about it, you can find out more at winnebagoman.com. Winnebagoman.com. And just the best of continued success with everything you do with this film and beyond, my friend. So from one pop culture aficionado to another, thank you for finally digging up the actual dirt on it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Ben Steinbauer, who is the director-producer of Winnebago Man, which plays tonight, Wednesday, and Thursday at Cinema 21. That is fantastic. That's awesome.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry. Let me turn your.
Oh, yes, it is.
There you go. That's when was the first time you saw the actual, like, the footage of the guy, the Jack Rebney footage?
Really just a few months ago.
Oh, that's golden.
I think it was when I first heard about the documentary. So I'd never seen it before. But yeah, no, it's hilarious.
Let's see. Hold on. I'm going to answer something in the Facebook page. Rick, why can't I hear you? Everything's fine. Maybe you've gone deaf. Hold on. Maybe you've gone deaf. Check your hearing. Perhaps you have a tapeworm or a tumor.
Will tapeworm make you go deaf?
Sure. Well, I read a study one time that said that that's actually one of the leading causes of deafness, Don. Don Taylor, who ought to know better. That guy sent me that email last night, actually, and it was just fantastic because it was right as I was getting ready to go to bed. I was up sort of late last night just prepping for Outlook Portland. And perversely enough, I was here late last night actually working on the live stream, which I thought we had fixed. Because at the beginning of today's show, there was a little bit of a kerfuffle with that. Because Bruce and I had just been trying to figure out, like, why is the music sounding so low? And I'm like, ah, it's in mono. I'll fix that. And there were a few people listening last night. I was here at like midnight, 1 in the morning, something. And there's a few people listening online. So if you were one of those folks who was listening last night, because I got a little thing that can kind of show me how many people are on. And I was going to wait till everybody, till it was dead. There was like nobody listening. But that just, that moment never came because of our immense popularity. And so I just turned on the mic and I just said, hey, this is Rick. I know it sounds creepy, but I'm here right now. So if you just hear a bunch of like banging and clanging and static, Like, that's me. So, if you hear the West Wing playing in the background, that's me, too. I'm just here at the studio trying to fix something with a live stream. So rather than just have people, just have to listen to something being plugged in and unplugged 1,000 times, do you know what I played? Let's see if I can actually find this here. I wanted them to hear something sort of, interesting, or just, rather than just hearing the sound of some guy turning a screwdriver or something in the background. Let's see if I can dig up the audio that I actually decided to play. It was this. It was this right here, and I know you've actually heard this, Don. Let's see if I can. It's a 55-minute music. This is what you heard last night, and several people messaged me to be like, "What are you playing? This is weird." It's a 55-minute mix of jazz standards and classics, sponsored by Newport Cigarettes. And about every 5 minutes, it's interrupted by a female voice singing a Newport Cigarette jingle. Where she'll come on, she'll say, "Newport is smooth like a cigarette ought to be," or whatever. And then I would occasionally pop out again to just say, "Hey, I'm eating a Slim Jim right now while I'm working on the live stream."
So when you're here late at night all by yourself and you know that there are people online listening to the recorded archives, are you ever tempted to just break in,
yes,
and say something really, really creepy?
Kill. What?
Yeah.
Yes, or just to put like backward satanic messages underneath me. No, last night it was just sort of just the mellow smooth sounds of Newport Cigarettes. Let's see if I can find one of the Anyway, so it's just this for like an hour. And so this was sort of it was really bizarre, actually. I felt like I had gone into a time warp, because I'm here in the studio and I was wearing a button-down shirt last night, and I had the sleeves rolled up. I have this jazz playing in the background. A voice is coming on and singing about Newport Cigarettes every now and again, and I'm holding like a screwdriver, like an actual screwdriver in my hand. And I felt as though I'd fallen into some weird Don Draper, Bob Dobbs netherworld where it was like 1952 or something. It's all very strange. Anyway, so I thought we had fixed that problem last night, but apparently the only thing I fixed was the fact that it was working properly to some degree earlier, and I managed to make that go away. So it's what I do.
At least you didn't flip that make everything suck switch on the back of the board again.
God damn, you want to talk about a thing that just vexed me. When we started Legion of News, this has not been like a sterling week in terms of technical things, but the thing is, it actually is just, it's not even a human error, it's just like dumb error. Yesterday at the beginning of Legion of News, and then we'll actually get underway with some news and some stuff here. We got things that we got the Nazi watch on the way, penis watch, probably more taunting phone calls directed at Dawn. We'll do the top five. But, yesterday at the beginning of Legion of News, we couldn't get it, but one of the microphones to work for some reason. And I couldn't figure out why the hell that was. There's a switch in the back that effectively controls three of the four microphones. And that switch was turned on. But it was that thing where there was like a little bit of like, there was like a little bit of dirt or grime or detritus or flotsam or jetsam or something. There was just like a little bit of schmutz back there that actually had stuck inside the switch and was preventing the switch from being turned all the way on. It was like if something were to get stuck inside a light switch casing and prevent it from being turned on all the way. That's really what it was. It was just like a little bit of grit back there that was preventing the switch from being on, which is why I kept going, "But it's turned on!" So that was where the universe just decided to have a little bit of fun with me. Decided to amuse itself at the expense of one R. Emerson. At the news desk, kids.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, let's try this whole Nazi watch thing, shall we?
So this is what I was greeted with when I walked into the studio today. I just said, "Hello, Dawn, how are you?" And Dawn said, "Do we have a Nazi watch?" And I said, "I don't really know. It's entirely possible." And she said, "Let's try to find one." And I said, "No problem." And in fact, I think you were about to open your mouth to suggest one. And I just said, no, I'm all over it. I'll take care of that. So we'll see this actually.
You immediately knew what you wanted to do for a Nazi watch.
Without further ado, for no particular reason, here is your Nazi watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Oh.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your Nazi watch.
A self-proclaimed white supremacist is running for a seat on the Southern California school board. Dan Schrunder. Schrunder. Who is currently a representative for the California chapter of the Aryan Nations and formerly president of the organization, filed nomination papers last week to run for one of two open seats on the Rialto Unified School District Board.
Did you say that he's actually a neo-Nazi, or is he an Aryan? I guess there's some difference.
He's an Aryan Nation guy. He's a white supremacist.
Okay, but is he a member of the, is that the actual party he belongs to? Because, you know, there's like those guys have all the, you know, the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front and the Judean Front of the People and whatever. You know, there's a whole splinter thing. Because the actual, like, American Nazis, they sort
of... there is a photograph of him standing
in front of a huge swastika.
Yeah.
The best part is that, like, those guys are just, you know, they're a source of ongoing amusement, you know, in some odd way to all the rest of us. But the actual American Nazi Party... I think the last time one of those guys ran for office, it was like, I don't know, in Georgia or something. And then he was like the first one to do it in like 20 years. It was a thing that became more of a punchline than an actual event, you know, some sort of a Nazi running for office. So maybe it's maybe that particular brand of inadvertent comedy is on its way back.
Well, Schrunder announced his candidacy on an Aryan Nations blog. He has said that he's not backed by the group and he won't allow his white supremacist beliefs to affect his decisions if he's elected.
It'll play no part in his views, Don.
Some of Schrunder's neighbors say they'd vote for him despite his controversial views.
He's a good man.
Louis DeCola told a local news organization that Dan's a good teacher. Different views are what make the world go round, he said.
Well, who can disagree?
Other neighbors in the community strongly objected to Schrunder's candidacy and say they think it's insane for a Nazi to be on the school board. The 27,500-student Rialto School District is nearly 76% Hispanic and nearly 16% Black. Matt Leiner, another neighbor, worries about the influence Schrunder would have on the children. He said, it's opening up the wrong thoughts in our youth's minds. If he's going to be in control, he can't be putting his negative thoughts in their minds. Schrunder said he will be vying for one of the open school board seats against incumbents Joanne Gilbert and John Casalunas, who are seeking re-election.
Does he have? Does it list any of his sort of like his platform? You know, what he's running on or, you know, for or again?
Not really. One of his opponents says that anyone who votes for him would have to be crazy and backward. And Schrunder admits to having delivered racist flyers using epithets to describe Blacks and Latinos to Rialto neighborhoods, as well as invitations to celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday.
What is his name?
And he's a fine, clean-cut-looking fellow
is
there,
his,
too.
His name is... Oh, wow. He looks exactly the way you'd expect him to look. Schrunder. It seems like an odd name, almost like a truncated name. Almost like maybe there was another syllable that was supposed to go at the end of the self-loathing white supremacist's given name. I'm just speculating. I'm not saying that that's the case. All right. Well, this seems like a reality show in the making. And we can get a camera crew down there sometime, because that'll be the next step, right? I mean, because we've got the polygamous reality show going on, and then there's the what reality show did we just
Sister Wives,
the Sister Wives thing. But then there was something else. There was some other reality show we were talking about like last week, and I was saying that's another example of like anything you can think of, you got to act on that idea now, because eventually somebody will beat you to the punch and they will make that into the television show or movie or whatever before you do. So it
well,
seems...
I had my show idea that was I'm a midget and I'm married to a corpse.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying I would be trademarking that if I were you. That's something that I would be talking to an intellectual property lawyer about right now. All right, well, there you go. There's your first ever Nazi watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Someone in the text box suggested Take the Skinheads Bowling by Camper Van Beethoven.
No, it's...
I like this one, though.
Yeah, no, this is better. Plus, every time I hear Take the Skinheads Bowling, it just sounds like Peace, Love, and Understanding by Elvis Costello. Mm. They're like the same song. I always get confused when I hear that. I think this just fades out here. What a strange time in America this was. It's set in a Nazi prison four camp. It's a barrel of laughs. All right, well, there you go. Did you ever see Werner Klemperer interviewed when he was sort of out of character? You know, he's like on The Tonight Show or something?
I don't think so.
He's the weirdest guy. I honestly just don't know. It's not like I'm personally offended by it or anything. It's, you know, what do I care? But it's just one of those things that it's hard to imagine being in the room as they were discussing setting a situation comedy in a Nazi prisoner of war camp, and that everybody agreed that it would be like a big barrel of laughs that America would go for, and that America did go for it.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, which I maybe is not surprising. It's just odd that was, you know, like you couldn't even have a toilet flushing on television at that time. It's just very very strange. It's sort of like rib tickling, Nazis. You know, sort of the
And it was really just all about them just trying to get out. So it was about as edgy as like a Yogi Bear cartoon.
No, I'm not saying that I was offended by it. I'm just saying it's one of those things that I don't think you would be able to do now, strangely enough. Like you couldn't have done it in 1945. You couldn't have done it in 1950. And I don't think you could do it now. You could only have done it like then. So it's this weird bell curve of what is acceptable and what is not. We can't even show a picture of goddamn Mohammed, you know? So, all right, well, what are you going to do? Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Congressman Charles Rangel showed up at the opening of a bridge over the Harlem River yesterday and spoke to reporters about the upcoming ethics trial.
Charlie's Rangel.
The 80-year-old veteran Democrat said he's looking forward to setting the record straight, but he would still like to reach a settlement with the ethics committee.
Well, deal would not be the word I would use, but if you say, are you interested in allowing the truth to come out without going through a trial? Yes, yes.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Jack Klugman. Oh, let's hear that one more time.
Well, deal would not be the word I would use, but if you say, are you interested in allowing the truth to come out without going through a trial? Yes. Yes.
Would you like to receive copies of Watchtower at your home?
Rangel said it takes two sides to reach an agreement, and there's a lot of saving face involved in the process.
Who the hell needs to go through the embarrassment of a trial when there could be an ethical solution? To me, the solution is allegations and evidence. That's all. That's not all.
That's not nearly as good as the first soundbite.
Well, deal would not be the word I would use, but if you say, are you interested in allowing the truth to come out without going through a trial? Yes! Yes!
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Awesome. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Doctors originally thought that Ron Sveden of Brewster, Massachusetts, had a tumor growing on his lung, but when they looked closer, they got a big surprise.
Tumor?
I barely knew her.
Sorry.
I was told I had a pea seed in my lung that had split and sprouted, Sveden said.
No.
It was not a diagnosis Ron Sveden was expecting. It was probably about a half an inch, which is a pretty big thing, of course, he said. Ron had been sick for months. He was already fighting emphysema when his health took a turn for the worse. On Memorial Day, Sveden's wife called 911, and he was rushed to the hospital where doctors took x-rays and found his left lung had collapsed.
Jesus.
For 2 weeks, they ran tests, but they all came back negative for cancer, until one doctor found a plant growing in his lung. Ron said he never felt anything growing in his chest, just a lot of coughing. Doctors suspect that he had eaten a pea at some point in the last couple of months. It went down the wrong way into his lung and began to grow there. One of the first meals I had in the hospital after the surgery had peas for the vegetable. I laughed to myself and ate them, said Sveden.
God damn. That's just horrifying is what that is.
God has such a sense of humor. It could have been just nothing, but it had to be a pea, and it had to be sprouting, said Nancy Sveden, Ron's wife.
That's like one of those stories they have every now and again where it's like a guy has a headache and they crack it open and he's just got like mold or something growing in his head.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that I don't want to think about the plants growing inside me. That's going out Jordy Verrill style.
Yeah,
you wouldn't think that
peas could grow in your lungs.
You would think that they would not be able to get a sufficient purchase. Sort of in your alveoli or whatever those things are. I mean, it's humid, sure, yeah, but I mean, you need more than that. Otherwise, the whole world would just be a big terrarium. Here's Dawn Taylor. We'll do one more here. We'll take a break. On the other side, we got all the stuff to get to. We got the. Have we done the penis? Why haven't we? We've done the Nazi. We've done Nazi, but not penis. Penis watch on the way. Let's see. We did the interview with Ben Steinbauer. We got that. We'll do the top five coming up later on, which is the top five absurdly happy songs, which are found in my MP3 player of choice, and so forth. This is Dawn Taylor.
A leading distributor of electronic cigarettes has agreed to halt sales in Oregon, according to Attorney General John Kroger. Kroger said Smoking Everywhere Incorporated did not seek U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval and provides no evidence to support claims that its so-called e-cigarettes are a safe alternative to conventional tobacco products. He also expressed concern that the company geared its marketing towards young people. Oregon last year became the first state to go to court to block the sale of the devices, some of which are designed to look like traditional cigarettes. Smoking Everywhere's electronic cigarettes have a battery-powered heating element and a replaceable plastic cartridge that contains chemicals, including liquid nicotine. The heat vaporizes the liquid for inhalation. In settling the suit, the Florida-based company admitted violating Oregon's Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Besides no longer selling its products here, the company agreed to pay more than $95,000 to the state's Department of Justice.
You know, the thing about that is that, well, first of all, that's the cigarette that I bought Sarah. I bought her that in Vegas, actually, when I was there. And then she quite enjoyed it. Then it was subsequently stolen, of course, by some jackass. That thing was awesome. But I do now have a little bit of gratitude that I did not invest in the company, which is something I was tempted to do because I thought it was such a fantastic product.
There's another company that makes a really good one called Blue, B-L-U. And it's a very cool-looking plastic little cigarette you get in white or black. And like with the one Sarah had, the end
it
glows.
Lights up, yeah.
It lights up when you inhale, like I say. Except on the blue one, it's actually blue. It glows blue on the end. Basically, part of it is because that way, when you're using it in a restaurant or indoors, people can see that it's not an actual cigarette.
But that was the whole selling point of the other one, was that so you could cause trouble. That's exactly why I bought that one for her. I said, you got to go smoke this in bars and then refuse to put it out. And then when they try to call the man on you, and then it's not a real cigarette, and then ha-ha. And so it was a whole way just to cause a ruckus everywhere. It was a way to cause a ruckus without actually violating the law in any way. It was the best of all worlds, because it was all of the chaos and trouble that comes with breaking the law without actually breaking the law. And so I lament that thing was stolen from her. I wonder if that means that it's illegal to use them or if it's just illegal to sell them.
I'm not sure. I know that this one company has been banned, and that seems to be part of the problem. Is that they're the owner of the company is fighting it because he contends that they're a cigarette company and they don't need to, you know.
Well, because there's nothing illegal in the product. That's the
right
thing. Because there's no reason on earth it should be illegal, except that the government knows better than you what you ought to be putting in your body, and they're not to be questioned ever, ever, ever. And because what we want to do is actually to make sure that we can stop trade, stop business at every opportunity, make sure that nobody is actually able to sell goods for services. Because in this recession, if you have too many people with profitable businesses, it just makes everybody else jealous, apparently. So we have to make sure that they can't sell their product.
The guy is also claiming that, and I think he has a point, that a state can't ban a product without banning every product within the same category. And if they're categorizing electronic cigarettes as cigarettes, then, you know, so this whole thing is just kind of...
And especially because, as the guy, and the guy didn't actually come out and say this in the article, but the especially absurd part is that cigarettes are, like, way more dangerous. Because nicotine in and of itself is not harmful. It's not cancer-causing. It's addictive. And there are, and I think it raises your blood pressure slightly, but it's not harmful in and of itself.
Yeah, it's the tar and all the other additives that are the issue.
Yeah, but of course, you know, the e-cigarette guy doesn't... I'm just speculating here. The e-cigarette guy doesn't have any number of... powerful politicians, none of whom reside in this state, I'm sure, on his payroll.
Well, and I can see why the electronic cigarettes would be threatening to traditional cigarette manufacturers. But again, the liquid nicotine has to be coming from somewhere. So, and I would imagine, isn't it derived from tobacco?
Maybe, but it might be synthesized, or they might be getting it from overseas. Mm-hmm. In other words, if it doesn't have to be of the highest quality, because you're not...
And also, sales of these things aren't even remotely close to sales of traditional cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, and plus, the nicotine doesn't have to have any particular taste to it. In other words, it doesn't. All it has to do is be a functioning chemical. It's like saying, if you wanted caffeine as opposed to coffee, if all you needed was like extracted caffeine to sell in a powder or something, as opposed to coffee, you could get it from anywhere because it doesn't have to have high quality, because the only reason you need the quality is for the actual taste of the coffee. So you could get just like a bunch of like what are those like Robusto beans from Vietnam or whatever, which are crap. They're terrible. They taste awful. But they have actually more caffeine than Arabica beans, which taste better. So that's, you know, he could just be getting it from, from just some guy in Germany who's just, selling it to him or whatever. So it does not surprise me, because the cigarette companies, as much as we like to think that cigarette smoking is sort of on the way out, I mean, they have massive amounts of revenue from like third world nations, which is sort of that's the big market for selling anything that'll kill your customers.
Well, in Asia as well, they have a lot of money invested in getting very young people started smoking early in Japan in particular.
It's like selling them a lot of very, very small atom bombs.
Yeah.
That go off over time. All right. Well, let's do, I lied, let's do one more here, and then we will take a little break. On the other side, we'll come back. We have more, including today's top five and so forth. Oh, and I was going to see if we can contact this guy who shot at the would-be robbers of this AT&T store, this Roger Witter guy. Incidentally, this hour of the Rick Emerson radio program is brought to you by fine folks, including The Cleaning Solution, in the person of Michael Beatty. He can be reached at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. This is Dawn Taylor.
President Barack Obama is urging the House to pass a $26 billion measure that would help reduce teacher layoffs. At the White House Tuesday, Mr. Obama urged members of both parties to come together.
This should not be a partisan issue. I heard the Republican leader in the House say the other day that this is a special interest bill. And I suppose if America's children and the safety of our communities are your special interest, then it is a special interest bill.
Sick burn. He's doing that thing where he acts as though he's gone all dotty and can't remember the guy's name. You know that guy, the guy that stands down on the floor behind the podium and says it's stuff. All right.
And he says more of the same.
We can't stand by and do nothing while pink slips are given to the men and women who educate our children or keep our communities safe.
Well, clearly we can't. Clearly we do. That just seems to be a falsehood. All right, there.
Isn't this supposed to, this measure is supposed to help reduce teacher layoffs?
I'm sure.
And so this is somehow, now he's somehow relating this to keeping children safe?
Well, because, presumably safe from whatever menace they might face out on the streets, Don. Because that thing of, like, if there's fewer teachers, then I guess they cut short school years. And then kids are out, playing with zip guns or something, or running with Elliot Ness's running with the Capone's gang or something, and
smoking electronic cigarettes,
being dead enders. Yeah, I don't know, because school is not really to educate children. School is just to sort of, but that's not really even to keep kids safe. That's just to keep us safe from them. School is just there to incarcerate them for 18 years so they're not off, like mugging your grandmother somewhere. I mean, that's we don't like to say that, but that's just the reality. It's not like children are actually being taught anything at most of our education facilities. Just, so what are you going to do? All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. You are listening to the Emerson News Network. Don't forget, this program is available on iTunes. If you would like to go to iTunes, you can find it in all of its archived glory. And it also streams day and night, when I'm not replacing it with, like, commercials for Newport cigarettes. You can find it at rickemerson.com via the live stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's also available in archived form, downloadable form, at rickemerson.com. Still to come, we will have today's top five and more. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here at the Emerson News Network. Stay right there. Back after this. Is it going to do the thing where it just loops? That's the soundboard just deciding to loop the audio. Wait. Third time? There we go. That's awesome. Let me just close this altogether. How about I do that, huh? How about I just... for the love of God. Is this because I mocked the technical gremlins earlier when they were causing difficulty with the thing? Is that why, Don?
Don't ask me. I'll just make something up.
That's true. Yeah, but making something up would at least be comforting at this point. All right, we'll see if we can get this.
Yes, Rick, it's the gremlins because you failed to worship their gods.
Is this because I rejected Baal when he was presented to me in golden calf form?
Exactly.
Damn me and my non-Baal worshiping. All right, we'll try something else here in just a second, so forth. Say something amusing for the people, Don.
So was that guy's last name Witter? Was that it?
Not Whitaker. It was not Roger Whitaker.
No, it was Witter. Wasn't it W-I-T-T-E-R?
Yeah. When you first said it, I just pictured, he has sold over 80 million albums, and he shot a guy.
Well, I found an address for him in Northeast Portland. I don't know if that's actually him, though.
Let's not say right now, just sort of out loud, that is him, because that.
No, because we don't know for a fact that's actually him.
That would be foolish, Dawn. That'd be a thing that we don't necessarily. That'd be a thing we don't necessarily want to do. All right, we'll try this one more time, and then we will return on the other side with the top five and more. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Sometimes it's wrong, you know that I've loved you all along. Sometimes I'm rich and sometimes I'm poor. Nothing really matters when you're dead on.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up here in just a bit, a penis watch, as well as today's top five. We'll do the top five most absurdly happy songs to be found on my MP3 player of choice. So that is all coming up as well. Somebody asked when today's show is going to be replayed. He said he missed the interview. I missed the interview with Ben, the guy behind the Winnebago film. When is it going to be replayed? So when this program draws to a conclusion, we will have a brief musical interlude, after which we'll have today's installment of Legion of News that will play. Legion of News will be followed by the encore of this show, but it'll be in the archives as well. So that's when you can find out all about that. At the news desk, ladies and gentlemen, this is Don Taylor. I'm sorry, let me do that. I didn't have the bed there. There you go. Here's Don Taylor.
Former American Idol winner Fantasia Barrino overdosed on aspirin and a sleep aid Monday night, but her injuries are not life-threatening, according to her manager. The overdose came the same day she read a court complaint from a woman who alleged that Barrino carried on a year-long affair with the woman's husband. Fantasia is heartbroken and is sorry for any pain she may have caused, her manager Brian Dickens said in a written statement. Yesterday, she was totally overwhelmed by the lawsuit and the media attention. She was hospitalized overnight, but is expected to go home today.
Now, Fantasia, it's so hard to keep American Idol winners straight. I can never, they all just sort of, like, whatever happened to Clay Aiken? Isn't that guy, wasn't he?
I don't know, he adopted a kid and vanished. I have no
went,
idea.
Went off to raise sheep somewhere. I just they just sort of it is sort of disappeared.
Fantasia Barrino is this one.
It's all just a wash to me. What's like what's his name? It's like Justin Garina Ginsana, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Justin Ginkgo Biloba. It's like a big conglomeration of like bad hair and odd names and terrible renditions of Shania Twain songs. It all just sort of morphs together after a while. Oh, hey, but speaking of morph, so I wrote this joke down during Legion of News, and I decided that was not the proper forum in which to deliver it, so I'm going to do so now. We were talking about the fact, which is just freaking weird, by the way, and there's no way to not make it weird, that Lawrence Fishburne's daughter, one would think, by the way, that becoming a porn actress would really not be a thing for which you'd want to continue to use the name Fishburne, but what do I know? So she's going to start making porn films for Vivid. And I'm just going to do a little bit of your work here for you, just priming the pump. So instead of Morpheus, I figure you could just go the obvious more penis route. There you go. Who are you? I am more penis. And then there you go. See, because he would have a large member.
The Cowboy Curtis one would be pretty easy, too, but I'm not going to say it.
Like reverse cowgirl Curtis?
You could say that,
see,
too.
See, there you go. Yeah. That's witty without being crude, Dawn.
Yeah, see, I was thinking crude. So.
No. See, there's if you do that, you never play the big rooms. Yeah. Here's Dawn Taylor, ladies and gentlemen, at the news desk.
Let's do our penis watch.
All right, let's see if I got that here. Here is your penis watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. Everything is going my way.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your penis watch for Tuesday.
A British computer engineer died after tying himself naked to a tree with a cord wrapped around his penis. Kevin Kirkland, 44, used a pair of makeshift roped handcuffs to attach himself to the trunk of the tree, but got trapped when a knot jammed around his wrists. Walkers discovered his body slumped against the tree the following morning near his home in Newport, Shropshire. He was wearing just his socks and boots and had a small piece of cord wrapped around his penis. He had died from hypothermia and blood loss from cuts on his wrists, which were caused by his desperate attempts to escape. He had drunk 7 pints of lager and a vodka and coke with a pal the night before he died, the magistrate's court was told. After leaving his friend at 1 a.m., he returned to his home in Newport, where he made the handcuffs by melting a single piece of rope to make 2 loops for his wrists. He then walked to a canal near his home, where he stripped naked and attached himself to a tree using the rope. Kevin tried in vain to escape in the pitch black and freezing temperatures by rubbing the rope up and down the tree, stripping the bark of moss and cutting his wrists. At 8 a.m., dog walker Mark Griffiths and his partner Elaine Batho heard Kevin crying for help. He told the inquest, "I heard a few grunts and groans. I called him, 'Are you okay? What's going on?' There was quite a lot of dried blood on his arms. He had marks on the back of his head, and he was quite dirty. I wrapped him in my coat to give him some dignity, and eventually the police officer came and cut him down. As we put him on the ground, I noticed a small cord around the base of his penis." Well, Kevin was rushed to the hospital but died a few hours later. Someone else told the inquest that Kevin's home computer was full of hardcore pornography and literature about rope bondage.
But isn't a thing where he tied himself to the tree?
He tied himself to the tree.
He tied himself to the tree, but in a manner in which he could not free himself?
Apparently so.
That's almost impressive. I mean, you know, it's like a well-done sort of, you know, I guess maybe ill-advised, but well-executed nonetheless. And he had a thing around his junk. It's like, what's his name? It's like Richard Quest, who is our favorite CNN news person, who has that, you know, he's the guy who looks at the huge, he's the British, big British Tony Robbins guy.
Yeah.
That I think Patrick noted, where he has the whole, "And it's very nice here in front of Buckingham Palace." And he has this, like, insane coked out look on his face. Turns out, because he's coked out, or was at the time.
Huh.
And they busted him walking through Central Park with another guy, and I forget exactly why it is that he was initially stopped, but it was something was happening, and the cops said, hey there, boyo, what's going on? And I think they found coke hidden in one of his shoes or something. But then he had a rope tied around his junk, and then up and around his neck a few times, and then like back to the junk, and then down into his pant leg or something. It's all very strange. So there's there appears to be a whole, "Will you please tie something around my penis?" Sort of subculture going on out there, to which I am not privy.
My confusion comes with the whole tying yourself to a tree thing, really. I can, you know, I don't have a penis. And if I did, I'm not sure I would want to tie a cord around it. But that's neither here nor there, really. I'm just thinking, you know, I've had a fair amount to drink at certain points in my life, but never have I even come close to considering taking my clothes off, walking to a park, and tying myself to a tree.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. So it's, I guess my question is, how do they know that he did it himself?
Well, that's true.
Because, you know, did he leave a note or something? Because I've tied myself to the tree if I'm not back by 6 a.m. Because it doesn't seem like that's a... Like, what would even be the point unless you were just flat-out crazy?
I mean, they somehow determined that he created these makeshift handcuffs with the melted plastic rope or whatever back at his house.
Well, I suppose that's possible, but it seems like if that... But that's just a thing where if you're like some guy who's a huge bondage enthusiast, eventually one wants to take theory and make it practice. So you would create your own restraints, I would think. That would be the next logical step. But this seems like more of a dual activity, a partner-based sport that one would engage in.
Well, the coroner recorded a verdict of accidental death and said, "It is clear to me that having put himself in that position, he could not get out of it."
Interesting. All right, well, there you go. So there's your ending at a rope around his penis. There you go. There's your penis watch.
Saying my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow.
A look at my enormous penis. Saying everything is going my way.
A listener in the text box shares that Richard Quest also had a dildo in his boot.
That's right. But then there was some whole discussion about whether boot meant his actual boot or whether it meant the trunk of his car.
Oh.
But I think he had cocaine in his... But see, I might be confusing him with the bare naked ladies guy, but I'm almost positive that he had, like, cocaine in his pants or something in his pocket, and then a rope around the junk, which I think... But see, now that I say that out loud, I think that might have actually been the case with George Michael. I think that one of the times they busted George Michael, I think he had a rope around his junk. What is that all about? What is going on with that? It's just...
You would know better than I. You have that equipment.
Because I'm a gay British coke user?
Because you're an owner of a penis.
Yeah, but I can't think of anything. There's no... No, I can't think of any reason why. The only reason why I can imagine that you would want to have something tied around yourself is to... You know, there are those devices that men can purchase to prolong or sustain the period of tumescence. I'm not going to pretend that that's the only reason I know about it, but one of the reasons I know about that is because Sarah accidentally wore one as a bracelet for a long time before somebody pulled her aside and explained what it was, which was equal parts awkward and hilarious.
She either has very small wrists or someone had a very large...
I think it's a bit of both, actually, because we bought it at a porn store. And she said, "Ooh, that looks fantastic. I'd like to wear that." And the guy behind the counter looked at me, and I looked at him, and we sort of arched eyebrows. And it was like, I'm not going to tell her if you're not going to tell her. And I just said, because then it's a whole trying to explain what it is and how it's used and why would I know. And nobody wants to take part in that. But the rope around the junk doesn't make any sense to me.
You and Sarah were in a porn store.
Yes, because she had never been to a porn store in her life. This is back, I don't know, maybe she was like 25, something. And she'd never been to an adult bookstore of any kind. And she expressed curiosity about what went on inside. And so we went to, a pretty innocuous place. We went to Fantasy. And it just sort of, it wandered. And that's, you know, and porn stores have really changed a lot since I was, you know, spending any appreciable amount of time there as a younger man, which wasn't like a lot of time even then. Like, when I was going to porn stores, when I was growing up, when I was a boy, there was no, like, you didn't have a thing that you jammed into your urethra and then plugged into a wall or whatever. Like, I don't know what the point of that is. Dawn?
I mean,
you've known men.
I don't think I've known anyone who's jammed anything into their urethra voluntarily.
Here's what's happened.
At least if I did, they didn't share it with me.
Here's what's happened. Is that in the wake of the guy calling you out on just citing studies during in that phone call, now you're just reluctant to answer anything.
I now know nothing.
Now I talk about a rope around the junk, no idea. Whereas the old Dawn Taylor would have said, "I knew a guy in Santa Barbara, and let me tell you, I was there, Farrah was there, Rod was there, and there was rope all around." But now I ask you about somebody jamming something into your urethra, and you go, "I don't have a penis. I wouldn't know anything about a rope. I don't know anything about jamming things into your urethra." So, you know, whatever. If that's how you're going to be, then that's how you're going to be. I can't force you to share anecdotes or observations with me, Don. Let's talk about the cleaning solution. I really didn't intend for this to be an awkward segue either, and yet it has become that. Stain removal. Odor repair. Yeah. Well, in any event, I'll just go back to what I said last hour, which is that when it comes to the last moment kind of cleaning at your home, or just, you know, as Don said, when you look at your home through somebody else's eyes, like, you know, I do this occasionally, because Laura had some friends over last, I guess it was like last Saturday or something, and I'm a guy, I mean, I can just go months without cleaning most areas of the house, including the bathroom, by the way, and I'm not just talking about, like, the toilet area, I'm talking about stuff in the bathroom that guys never, ever, ever think to clean, like, you know, the faucet, you know, or the underside of the faucet. Because why would you? Because you're never going to see it. It's like the one time we had our entire home professionally cleaned by somebody, and they cleaned the racks inside the refrigerator. Which is I didn't even really realize there were racks there. I mean, I knew there was something holding the food off the ground and keeping gravity from just sort of plunging it all down to the bottom. I didn't really ever thought about them or thought about cleaning them. But when Lara said, hey, I got some people coming over on Saturday, suddenly I'm just like, you know, Johnny cleans a lot, sort of going through the house and just scrubbing everything down. So it is when somebody's going to come visit your house, you're going to stay at your house, or maybe you've recently entered a world of swinging singledom after a period of not being that way, and you realize that at some point a member of the fairer sex might see your home and be horrified by the fact that everything you own is just sort of grubby and covered in stains. Some of those stains can't be helped. Some of them can. That's where you want to talk to Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution. It's 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211, locally owned and operated. And of course, he tries to get all his equipment, chemical supplies, tools, everything from Portland. And then he keeps his advertising dollars in Portland as well, as you might have noticed by his presence on the Emerson News Network. Whether it's carpet, upholstery, stone, anything you might walk on, they can do it. They can take pet damage and odors out as well as taking care of your residential or commercial operation. They do regular maintenance programs, so give them a call at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That is Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution. All right, there we go. Somebody in the text box says, Rick, yesterday at the beginning of the program, you said you were going to talk to us about the most horrifying American behavior you had ever seen. I forget why, and I bet you do too, he says, parenthetically, but you did not get to this. No, I didn't, and I don't remember why. I remember teasing it because I wrote it down for today, but I don't remember exactly why it is that I didn't get to it. Let's see if I actually printed it out here.
Someone also reminds that you promised the Art Alexakis story.
Oh, well. Damn. That's what that guy was actually... oh, man, I'm sorry, guy. That's what that guy was actually calling about earlier, right?
Mm, yep.
Where it was a whole lot of... he wanted to know the deal with the Art Alexakis, but it turned out that he was the guy who had sent the, as it turns out, ill-advised email about how you are just making stuff up all the time. And so that we just got totally sidetracked by that. So he wanted to know the deal with the Art Alexakis story. Or as he put it, the Art Alexakis debacle. The thing is, I'm not even really sure which Art Alexakis debacle he's talking about. I mean, there could be any number of them. So I will just have to, I'll have to bluff my way through this. If I recall correctly, the Art Alexakis debacle is not, it's not like that much of a debacle, but I believe he is referring to the time when Sarah and I had this experience where it seemed for all the world like Art Alexakis was stalking is a strong word. It seemed to be following us. And it was because we had talked about him a bit on the air because we have some, I won't even say friends, but we have some acquaintances in common with Art Alexakis. And Sarah actually did. And Sarah actually hosted a radio show with him for, I think, a few episodes. I think it was a long-term thing. I think he was doing like a radio show of some kind, and he wanted like some, he wanted the female co-host, and you know, she did it. And I think he ended up going with somebody else or whatever. But so she had known him, and then, we are good friends with a couple of folks, actually, who had professional relationships with Art Alexakis. I'll put it that way. And those of you who are familiar with the Portland music scene, you probably know what and who we're talking about. And those had not always ended well. Those had not always ended amicably. Apparently, some of the professional entanglements in which Art Alexakis found himself ended with a little bit of rancor, and sometimes came as a complete shock to the people on the other end of the relationship. Anyway, and so we had sort of talked about this on the air, and we'd kind of, you know, told a couple of these stories, and other people had told some stories, and for a while, he just became this sort of ongoing, and it was right around the time, I think, that they were hitting him for back taxes for like $4 million. And we latched on to that soundbite where it's just him saying, like, here is the money that I owe you. And every time somebody mentioned his name, we would just play that soundbite because it made us laugh. Anyway, so after – and it's what always happens. It's where we will just sort of seize on someone as like a little bit of a whipping boy. And it's just sort of a Beetlejuice thing where we will talk about them and then inevitably we will go out into public and it's like there they are. I should say this. You know who I won't even say where it happened. You know what? You know somebody I ran into last week? I ran into the woman who produces the Think Out Loud show for OPB.
Oh God!
And the OPB—that's the show that had the girl with Tourette's, where we were playing the audio and cackling at it. I ran into the woman who produces that show like 3 days after that, and I said, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I produce a show on OPB called Think Out Loud." In the back of my head, I was thinking, "Jesus God, why am I here? Why is this happening?" She did not piece everything together, fortunately. But so we had talked about Art Alexakis, and we'd sort of gone on and on about him for just a few weeks. And then Sarah and I are walking down Hawthorne, and we were going to lunch or something. Sarah and I are on Hawthorne, and as we are sitting sitting outside Bauer's Bakery, which no longer exists. As we are sitting at the table outside Bauer's Bakery, who should be – what to my wondering eyes should appear? But Art Alexakis sort of slumping his way down the street toward us, and I looked up. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and it's that thing where you don't quite know if you've made eye contact long enough to recognize each other, because, you know, he certainly knew who I was. We'd met. And I just looked at Sarah, and I said, hey, we'll just keep talking like we're talking here, but just Art Alexakis is coming up behind you, so don't be alarmed. If his cold, steely hands should close on your throat, I will take appropriate action, but just look away. Don't look him in the eye. And so he don't make any contact with him, and back away slowly if he attempts to initiate any sort of contact. So he walks by, and as he walks by the table, he doesn't stop. He just sort of slows a little bit, like he goes from like 4-4 time to 2-4 time, and then he just keeps walking. And I thought, well, that was a little weird. So then we continue our lunch, and then later we're standing in a totally separate part of Hawthorne, and I look, and it's like here he is coming up the street at us again, and I thought, well, that's sort of strange. Let's minimize the awkwardness. Let's cross the street. So we go to the crosswalk. We cross to the other side of the street, and it's like this is in a totally separate part of Hawthorne. It's like there's no, you know, I mean, I know it's the same street, but I mean, my God, unless he was just wandering randomly, which is possible, I suppose. He is Art Alexakis, so. He may have just been, looking for another radio station lobby in which to sit. So we went across the street, and so this is now twice he's passed us. So we go across the street to the Hollywood Video, and I don't even know if that's still there. But we go to the Hollywood Video, which is sort of by that subway, which is in turn by CD Game Exchange. And so we're standing there, and I think we were trying to debate whether to go to CD Game Exchange or whether just to split up for the day and just head our separate ways. And as we're standing there, I look at the street, and it's like, here he comes again. And I was just like, okay, you're going to think I'm making this up, but Art Alexakis is coming up behind you for the third time. And this is in the space of like 5 minutes. It's not as though it was over the course of a day we somehow ran into him on the same street three times. That would almost be – this is in the course of just a few – where we had deliberately changed directions, like when you're trying to lose a tail in the French Connection or something. And finally, I was just like, F this. And so we ducked around the corner, and we'd go inside to the Hollywood Video. And the Hollywood Video has got that thing where the windows are sort of tinted, but it's like the one-way – it's like interrogation room glass, where if you're inside Hollywood Video, you can see out on the sidewalk. But if you're out on the sidewalk, you can't see in. So we were just like, the hell with this. And so we duck inside to Hollywood – you know, I was thinking he's going to shiv me or something. So we duck inside to the Hollywood Video. And there was, and of course, and then we're doing the thing of not making any noise, as though he's got super, like arachnid hearing or something. You know, he's got extra ears in his knees that he can pick up our panicked breathing with. And so we're standing inside the Hollywood Video, and he walks by the outside, and we're sort of looking, and we're not moving, and he does the thing of like looking in the window, like cupping his hands on the window, and he doesn't see us because he's at a different section of the window. Because again, you can't really see in from the outside. But he does the thing of stopping and cupping his hands around his eyes and, like, looking at the, you know, into the window in the glass like this. And then he just sort of wandered off after a while. And it was just one of those things where, like, you know, where the bear comes and he sniffs the picnic basket and, like, sniffs the door of the trailer, you know, and then, like, sniffs the tree and you're up in the top branch going, don't look up, 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 don't look up. And then he finally wanders away. And then you just get in your car and you speed home. There you go. And then so we referred to him as Art Alex Stalkus for, like, weeks after that, which probably just exacerbated the situation. And then I went to a poker game and he was there, like, months later. And that was all awkward, too. So there you go. The end. Let me just tell this story about the embarrassing American thing. We'll do a couple news stories. We'll do the top five, and then we'll just and then we'll blow this pop psychology stand.
Okay.
Anything you'd like to contribute at this point in the show, Don?
No.
Well done. embarrassing American thing. So this is actually yesterday. This is the day that I was yesterday when I was running so absurdly late. I had left my house. And then got stuck in all this traffic, and I go down to Portland Music to buy a windscreen for this microphone because we are still short one mic, and this is the mic we have. It doesn't have a windscreen, and so people tend to pop their plosive sounds a lot, which I can't even really replicate on this microphone because the windscreen is affixed to it.
And if you're unfamiliar with the windscreen that he's talking about, it's one of these foam rubber microphone condoms that looks kind of like a foam clown nose.
Yeah,
only these, he got the black one.
And it's that thing like in the health class or whatever, your teacher's got a rubber and a banana, and she's saying, take the man's penis, you know, or whatever. And it's so I'm doing that with the microphone yesterday. But I'd stopped at Portland Music. I mean, it's not even about them, so I just, you know, whatever. But I stopped by Portland Music, which is a fine store where I purchase many of my electronic and music accessories. And I'm standing behind a guy who is in line. He's buying something. He's buying, like, a guitar cable or whatever. I won't identify the clerk, but I'm standing behind, you know, the customer number one, and I'm just waiting to ring up my purchase so I can, you know, not be late to the show, resulting in some sort of massive technical implosion. So I'm standing there with my windscreen, and the guy in front of me is buying a microphone cord, and he opens his mouth and he says, the guy at the counter says, will that be all, sir? And the guy in front of me, and I won't attempt to do the voice, but he says, yeah, that'll be it. And it's obviously he is not from here. He obviously has some accent that I would identify as New Zealand. In fact, he had said he was from New Zealand. So the cashier says, anything else? The New Zealand guy says, no, that'll be it, or whatever, in his, like, New Zealand voice. What does the guy behind the cash register immediately do?
A Crocodile Dundee thing?
He starts speaking in his approximation of the New Zealand accent, but how does he do it? He starts talking like an Australian.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm really no one to point fingers here because I was trying to do a British voice and I was just doing Brian Brown from Cocktail, who is in fact Australian. So this guy was doing basically the same thing. But, you know, at least mine was like in a closet into a microphone and I was filled with shame about it. And I realized at the time it was probably terrible. And so
the guy's from New Zealand. He's doing whatever. It has this exchange going on with it. And then the clerk decides, well, there you go, mate.
And he says something horrible like that. And at the end of the transaction, and he's, you know, and it's clearly on the guy behind the counter clearly is just doing like an Australian thing. Because again, because he's saying like mate, which I do believe is it's not like they have a trademark on the word or something, but that is a dialectical mannerism typically associated with Australians, not so much like folks from New Zealand. But he's doing like the little head movement too of like, you know, well then, with you, jolly good, you know, and he's just, and it was like watching a horrible live action version of a Ricky Gervais sketch take place. And I was just wanting the floor to open up and swallow all of us to eliminate our shame. And the guy from New Zealand is just doing that tight, really constricted laughter that really only people from certain sections of Europe and related nations do properly. The sort of, that's very funny, stupid Yank, where it's like the seethingly yes, bitter laughter where they're just trying to choke back, you know, like a solid punch right into your face. So the guy finishes his transaction, and meanwhile, and I'm just sitting back there, and I'm just staring at the floor and just wishing that my ears would close up so that I couldn't hear it anymore. And then the guy behind the register just rings it up, sticks it on the bag, and then ends it by saying, good day. Good day, mate. There you go. So he ends the call. And I was just, you know, blackberrying to myself, like, you know, dumb clerk speaks an Australian accent. Most horrifying moment ever. Be sure to share with radio audience for everyone's amusement. So there you go. Day late. I've shared it with you. You know, that and the Art Alex Stalkus.
Yeah, never do that. No. Never be that guy.
No, because why? You know, and it's just, and I don't know that other people, do people in other nations do that? Do people in other countries, when you talk to them, they do like a stupid Yank voice?
Probably.
I mean, I've never experienced that. I've never heard of anybody experiencing that. But there's got to be some equivalent to that guy in other places, in other hemispheres.
I'd there is.
We like to think it's not just an American trait, but then again, you know, what the hell do I know?
But we're huge jerks, so.
That's really us especially, right here in this room. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A California man failed to clear the shoreline while cliff jumping at Lake Natoma, suffering severe injuries to his legs and triggering a water rescue.
Well done.
The Sacramento Metro Fire Department said the 20-year-old man made a running leap off the China Wall section of Lake Natoma just before 3:30 p.m. Sunday. Friends said he leaped over a tree but could not clear the sloping shoreline. He just landed on the bank and snapped his legs instantly, said Tage Shali. Oh. He wasn't thinking, he just went. The man suffered compound fractures on both of his legs and was transported to the UC Davis Medical Center. He had bones sticking out of his legs, said Sacramento Metro Fire Captain Christian Pebbles.
Why?
It was a pretty gory situation.
God damn.
Despite the severe injuries, authorities said the man was fortunate to survive. In September 2009, a 16-year-old boy died at the same section of shoreline after jumping off the cliff and failing to resurface in the water. Authorities said they respond to the China Wall area every year to deal with fatalities and severe injuries stemming from reckless behavior. This is what's going to happen to you, Captain Pebbles said. You are either going to die or you're going to break your legs. If you're not one of those two, you're just a lucky person. It's illegal to jump off the cliffs in the area, but the injured man will likely avoid charges because he wasn't caught in the act.
Jesus, God. You know, and I've never broken a bone, ever. I'm not saying it's a lot of fun, but I'm probably making that kind of injury worse than it is in my head. I mean, you know, I know it's painful and it's whatever. But the idea of just, when I think about breaking a bone of some kind, you know, injuring yourself that way, it's never, like, I never imagined the hairline fracture. I never imagined where it's just like a compression fracture or something. To me, it's always that. It's where there's just like a, you know, and it's just they snapping it like a twig, and then it's just like, you know, jutting out of your knee or something.
Yeah.
It just seems like the worst thing on earth.
I've never had any real interest in most sports, but my first husband really loved sports, and he watched football and basketball all the time. And finally, I decided, okay, I'm going to watch football. I will give this a try. I will sit down. I will watch football. First thing, sit down to watch a football game. I am not kidding. Within the first 10 minutes was that thing where
Joe Theismann's
leg snapped in half. And I'm just like,
I'm out.
What the heck? And my husband was going, you know, this doesn't happen all the time. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's an omen.
Yeah.
This is a sign that I'm not supposed to watch football.
Well, the fact that he has to say, like, it doesn't ever happen, you know, but he didn't say, he said it doesn't happen all the time. So, like, maybe not as often as, you know, you might be fearing.
Well, it's like, and then they kept showing it over and over and over again.
Well, that's because it's awesome. There's just no getting around that. Well, that's like the...
Well, they had no football to want to show at the time because, you know, the game stopped. So I guess all they could really do was just show his leg snapping over and over again while they talked about it.
Sort of an endless repeat. Well, that's like when my cousin was visiting from California at one point. And and she grew up in L.A. And, you know, she didn't really have any exposure to country folk, which I believe is what she viewed us as. So we were just sort of the hillbilly, you know, the interesting, you know, rube relatives that she got to visit every now and again, where she would really be fascinated by the idea, for example, that you could leave your home and just, just walk down a street to like a 7-Eleven and then walk back home. Because she lived in at the time, a rather scurrilous part of Los Angeles where you didn't really want to do that sort of thing. You wanted to, like, run from the house, you know, to your car. And then the car would take you to school where you would run from the car into the school. And then you would just, like, hide under your desk for 8 hours. And then you would run back home, you know, via the car. But so she came to visit us, and my parents were like, you know, we'll take you, we'll give you the full, you know, like, mouth-breathing experience. We'll take you to the rodeo. Which is a thing I just saw more times in my youth than I could even care to remember. Just the rodeo. And the rodeo sucks.
I have never been to a rodeo.
You're not missing anything. The rodeo is... I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody who just, you know, whatever, you or your family, you love the rodeo, or you do the rodeo thing, or you take part in it. It's not like I even hate the state fair or something. I mean, it's not really my bag, but I mean, whatever. But the rodeo is just retarded. This is when I was a youth and I hadn't really articulated, even just sort of in my own head, the whole thing of rooting for the animals. Because to me, it was just like it just seemed like a bunch of guys like kicking a bunch of animals in the ribs to make them, you know, like, give me a ride, I demand it, wham, and then they would, you know, just and then they'd use the spurs just to jam some animal in the junk because they wanted to be carried around a ring, which in retrospect is actually kind of what it was. But so we take my cousin to the rodeo, and she's all like sheltered Los Angeles girl in some strange way, and going to the rodeo, and she's all excited, and we're at the. You know, we're buying all the goddamn stupid nonsense that you buy at things like that. Where she's, you know, like that jazz where you buy the white cowboy hat that you then get like spray painted or something. You know, where it's like the guy does like it's like right next to the booth where they do the character view with the big head and the tiny body riding like riding a motorcycle. Right next, there's a booth next to that where they sell like a dazzlingly white cowboy hat, which they then custom paint for you with a variety of blue and pink spray paints, which is just as classy as it sounds, by the way. And then they glue feathers onto it, and then they give it to you, and they send you home. You know, and then if you're a boy, you don't see that because you're busy buying like butterfly knives or something, like three tables, and throwing stars, which seem to be available like everywhere right next to the popcorn. So we go to the rodeo with my cousin, and she's all excited, and she's like eating, you know, she's eating fistfuls of bad fair food, and she's wearing her stupid, like, pink spray-painted hat and whatever, and she's all, you know, and her, I don't know, I wish I could ask her what she had been picturing, like, what she thought was going to happen. I think she must have figured that it was just sort of a fun-loving game, you know, where, like, a big, smiley, sort of Disney-fied calf or, you know, the cow or steer or horse or something came out. And then, you know, like a big smiley sort of Marlboro man, you know, but like less gay and menacing, sort of roped something, and then they high-fived, and then they all went off to, you know, to sleep in bunk beds together somehow. Instead, what she got was a guy coming out on a horse who clearly had a huge black rubber band around his testicles, by the way, to make him sort of, you know, irritated. And the irritating job worked really well because he kicked the cowboy off and then stepped on his head, after which they tried to stop it because apparently he stepped on the guy's head, instantly snapping his neck. And then when they came out to try to stop it, the horse, I guess, was still a bit... He was still a bit perturbed about the whole trying to cut off the blood supply to his junk business because the horse really resisted being corralled. And so then they got the rodeo clowns out there to try to distract him, one of whom gets kicked like right in the thorax, which was just deeply satisfying even at that young age. It was like you could just hear his lungs collapsing from, you know, even way up in the cheap seats. It was awesome. You know, but then, of course, the poor horse ends up busting a leg. And then they're like, you know, well, let's give it up for Speckles the horse. And you hear like a gunshot happening, you know, like off in the distance, you know, 5 minutes later. And then I remember looking over at my cousin who's just crying into her popcorn and saying, I'm ready to go. So there you go. So by not going to the rodeo, Dawn, that's what you're missing out on.
Yeah, one of the trips I took to Mexico with my mother. My mother tried desperately to get me to go to the bullfight with her, and I just wouldn't do it. And she kept saying, "No, this is an experience you want to have." I'm like, "No, it's really not. It's really, really not." I know what happens at the bullfight. I don't want to see the bullfight. She just thought since we were in Mexico, because she's been to bullfights endless amounts of times, because that's the kind of person my mother was. But yeah, it's like, no, we're here. We've got to go to the bull. It's like, no. Yeah, no, I really refuse to go to the bullfight.
And I don't know when that switch flipped in my head, too, where I just, I think... It's not that I was okay with animals being mistreated, but I was just sort of, I guess I was just sort of, and not even indifferent, that's the wrong way to put it. It's just that I never really, I think it's that culturally, you are brought up, you know, in our culture, and you're brought up to believe that, you know, there's certain things you don't do, and like you don't go kicking the cat around, and you don't go setting the dog on fire, or, you know, whatever, you know. It's just you're not mean to animals if you don't have to be. But even as a, you know, but you draw distinctions about that when you're a kid. Like when you're a little boy, you know, boys go and, you know, stomp on earthworms for like reasons that don't make any sense now. But, you know, but those same kids would never go just like pull the legs off a cat or something because you realize that that is somehow wrong. But just like with bullfighting, you don't recognize, I think, growing up that as being cruelty to animals because it's not sold to you that way. It's positioned as like, well, it's a cultural tradition. And a cultural tradition...
And you see it in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, and the bull's asking for it.
Right. The bull loves it. The bull can't wait to have... the bull can't wait to get on out there. And things are just sold to you as being, like, normal because that's how people have always done it. You know, but I mean, really, just because some, you know, like dirt-eating culture decides that they're going to amuse themselves by going and like jamming knives into something, that doesn't really mean that it's a swell idea. But at some point in my head, and I don't know when, the switch just flipped and I realized just how insane it was. And so now the high point every year of like the running of the bulls or like, you know, like when they have, you know, like some sort of big matador contest in Spain. Like I think last year is there was some like he was the most decorated matador in all of Madrid or whatever. And he was out there and he was like waving his like his gay, frilly, like, you know, bedazzled cloak around the crowd and going, look at me, I'm awesome. And then the next thing was like, oh, my God, look at me, I'm on the horns of the bull. Oh, look at me, they're sticking out my back. Oh, look at me, I'm bleeding to death. And it was like, if you watched the way that it was depicted on Yahoo News, they didn't show the full video, but it was actually better. It was like a slideshow of like, it was like the slideshow you see of Mount St. Helens. Slight bulge, bigger bulge. Holy God, there's, you know, explosions everywhere. Oh, it's a lake of fire. Oh, we're all gonna die. Oh, it's all black. You know, and then it just goes to nothing. So it was with this guy. It was like normal, little look of fear on his face, trying to run, bending backward like a human comma, and then on the bull's horns, with them protruding at the back, just being carried around like some sort of prize, which I imagine he was. And I watched that over and over again for days on end whenever I would feel low, whenever I would feel down about things. I'd watch it and it put a smile on my face. Do we go to the news desk here?
Do we?
Did we actually start another news segment here, or am I just
rambling?
Yeah,
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, let's go to the
news
desk.
I'm not keeping track anymore.
We'll do a couple more, and then we'll do today's top five. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Police in Toledo, Ohio, have just released surveillance video of an incident from New Year's Day. It shows 25-year-old Melody Duchesne driving up to a McDonald's drive-through window with a neighbor at about 6:30 in the morning and objecting strongly when she couldn't get Chicken McNuggets at that hour because the eatery had started serving breakfast. See, it's getting out. She's seen getting out of the car and hitting the drive-through employee in the mouth. At that point, the manager comes over, Duchesne swings a few more times, and the manager tries to pull her up through the window by her hair. Other employees prompt the manager to let her go, close the window as Duchesne tries to push it open, but then she breaks it with an object she takes out of her car. The passenger's mother said it was the employee's fault because they allowed it to escalate. You can actually see this video on CBSNews.com, and I showed it to Rick earlier.
It's awesome. Quite
delightful. This is one of the drawbacks of radio, is that we can't show you this woman.
Well, because there's no audio for it. Yeah. That's the other thing. One of the drawbacks of security cameras is that there is no there's no audio track. It's just this huge bison of a woman standing at the drive-thru and just getting her punch on right through at the poor girl who's just standing there.
And then an employee grabbing her by the hair and pulling her head through the window towards her.
Yeah.
But then her getting free, and then her smashing the drive-thru window. It's kind of all because she couldn't get Chicken McNuggets for breakfast.
And did you say what time it was?
Apparently it's 6:30 in the morning.
Well, no.
I guess they started serving breakfast at 2:30 a.m., they stopped the dinner menu and moved to the breakfast menu. So 6:30 in the morning, it's like, no, we're not.
You can't do that.
We're not making the Chicken McNuggets right now.
Well, see, it used to be. I mean, I will say, in the defense of the puncher, I think it's more difficult to keep track of those things than it used to be because it used to be in McDonald's where, you know, they opened at whatever 6 and then they closed at like 9 or something, and so but the changeover time was 10:30. That's when they stopped. But now. Like, I don't know when it is.
I think it's still 10:30, and I think that it might be like 11 on the weekends, but it's still like 10:30.
But see, the question is like and I guess maybe it says in this, the answer is when do they then start breakfast again? It's that whole like when can you feed the mogwai?
Well, for one thing, I think an awful lot of McDonald's are not open 24 hours, so that sort of makes it. I think
it's tricky.
It helps delineate it a little bit further.
Because the one near my house is open 24 hours. And I've actually wondered that before, like when the changeover back into breakfast food begins. Like if I'm there at 4 a.m. and I want a Filet-O-Fish, as I sometimes do, is that the sort of thing I can get? Or are they going to tell me to beat it, you know, once like 3 a.m. or something rolls around?
And that may be the case.
There's just no – see, and so it's perhaps it's the unpredictable nature of this.
Another reason why, though, Jack in the Box – far superior. You can get anything on their menu anytime, including breakfast items. You can get like the little croissant sandwich or the chorizo burrito, which is delicious.
Really?
And you can get it in the middle of the afternoon.
Chorizo with Jack in the Box is good.
Yeah, it's your standard.
I'm not saying it's going to taste
chorizo.
Like the real thing, but I mean,
chorizo
but it's,
and eggs and in a tortilla.
I don't know why. Now that I think about it, I have nothing against Jack in the Box. I just don't ever go there. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm weighing my food, because on the way home I pass. Let's see. I pass a Jack in the Box. I think I pass them all. I pass a Jack in the Box. I pass a Wendy's. I pass a McDonald's and an Arby's. No Burger King, but that's just because those things apparently are just gone now. You have to really
there
have
are
to,
a few
you
have here to look. In Portland, but
no,
not
it's
very
hard.
Many.
You have to. There's one on MLK.
Yeah, there's one in Delta Park.
And there's one by the airport, and that's the only one that I can think of. You really have to go out of your way to find a Burger King now. But whenever I'm driving home, I will consider the Wendy's, the McDonald's, and the Arby's for my fast food needs. I never consider the Jack in the Box. I don't really know why.
Jack in the Box, I think, is honestly superior in many ways.
Okay, if I were to go there, let's leave the chorizo thing out, because that's a hit or miss thing with me under the best of circumstances, much less at a goddamn Jack in the Box. What would you recommend, all things being equal, as an all-purpose, non-breakfast item there?
It depends on what you're in the mood for. They have.
But I'm saying, all things being equal, if I were to drop you to Jack in the Box right now, say, no breakfast food. Mm-hmm. You just got to get a main, a regular meal item off the menu, Jack in the Box, today. Go.
Well, if money was no object and I was in a sandwich mood, they make a, I'm not sure exactly what it's called. It's like a steak melt. It's chopped up bits of, little sliced bits of steak with, lots of cheese, and it's on grilled sourdough bread. It's very, very good. They also do these sort of teriyaki rice bowls where you get teriyaki beef with broccoli, and it's on rice, and it's in a little bowl.
That sounds fantastic.
And it comes with a little – and if you get the combo meal, it comes with an egg roll.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. See, so that's the thing I'm going to have to get. I'm going to have to get one of those on the way home maybe today. Or maybe after I go to see the Winnebago Man film tonight, which I think I'm going to be doing at Cinema 21. So, all right, there you go. Without further ado, ladies and gentlefolk, it's that time once again.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right. So, as a follow-up to yesterday's top five, which was in turn a follow-up, I think, to Friday. Friday, Dawn had done you did the top five songs that pick you up when you're feeling low, and then yesterday you did the top five songs to which historically. You would brood.
Yes.
When you were in a bad mood and you were just of a mind to wallow, as they say. so it just as inspired by that, I did the. This is not the top five most absurdly cheery songs like ever, or even maybe of all time in my life. I'm just saying, if you were to spot check my MP3 player right now, these are the top five most absurdly upbeat songs. Cheery songs to be found on my personal MP3 player. And I've actually withheld this top five until just now, sort of Price Waterhouse style. Just to preserve the element of surprise. All right, there you go.
So I'm grabbing the list now.
All right, so without further ado, these are the, and we'll start at the bottom where the honorable mention is. These are the top five most absurdly happy songs found on my MP3 player. Dawn Taylor.
Honorable mention, Barry Manilow, Daybreak.
Honorable mention because you had the Manilow thing yesterday.
Yes.
So I felt like it would be wrong to put it too much higher. I think this is the song that she actually kills people to in Serial Mom.
Singing to the world, it's time we let the spirit come in. Let it come on in.
Everybody's caught in the spin.
We've been running around
year after year.
Blinded with fear.
God damn, I love Barry Manilow.
But it's daybreak. If you wanna believe, it can be daybreak. Ain't no time to grieve, said it's daybreak.
Here's radio in a nutshell for you. When I was working, I won't name the station. It wasn't here. It wasn't in Portland. It was many years ago. I used to work. I have worked many, many, many times with jackass morning DJs. Even when I myself was not being a jackass morning DJ, they just seemed to sort of surround me like moths to some sort of a flame. And Anyway, so I worked with this Jackass Morning crew, and they had this brilliant idea they wanted me to help them with, because I guess they thought I was I was all good with the words and whatnot. They wanted me to help them write this hilarious parody called Date Rape. You know, and it was to this, because it's date rape, and I remember they said, no, leave my office now. Get out. See, because it's date rape. Ha ha. That's one of those times where you just go back to scratching your pen on whatever papers you were working in your desk and just pray for a cleansing fire to come through the building. Excellent. These are the top five most absurdly happy songs to be found in my MP3 player, if you were to check it right now. Dawn Taylor?
Number five, The Plain White Tees, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I love this song. And I love the Plain White Tees, and I love that Hey There Delilah song, and everybody can, you can eat a big bag if you don't like it. This is, you know, and here's the thing. Let me just back up for 1 second before we play this. Because that Hey There Delilah song came out, which I really honestly love. It's just one of the best pop songs of, like, the last 20 years. It's just hands down. There's no argument about it, in my opinion. It's just, it's irrefutable. But so many people just tagged them as being just that one song. And, like, well, they lucked into having a hit. And then when this album came out, which is Big Bad World, and this song was the first single. First of all, this is that thing of the band finally figuring out where the money's to be made. And saying, aha, it's in chicks. I got it. Grab that acoustic guitar of yours. Write another one of those hits that you're so good at. When I heard this, though, it's such a brilliantly simple idea for a chorus, and yet one that I had never heard done before. And that's when I just sort of gave it up, and I was like, okay, they're more talented than I am and always will be, and God bless them. And I do not begrudge them their success, because they followed up that one kind of freakish hit with this, which is really well done. And I love me a good verbal hook, too, where it's sort of a play on words.
Give me more loving than I've ever had. Make it all better when I'm feeling sad. Tell me that I'm special even when I know I'm not. Make it feel good when I hurt so bad. Barely getting mad. I'm so glad I found you. I love being around you. You make it easy. It's easy as 1, 2, 1, there's only one thing to do, three words for you, I love you.
I mean, come on.
There's only one
that's lovely.
To say those three words, and that's what I'll do. I love you.
It's that sort of 1, 2, 3 thing there that, amazingly, I had never heard done in a song that way. And that's somebody who discovers the obvious yet previously unexploited play on words. That is somebody that I salute.
This is the sort of song that would be playing while some mopey boy would be falling in love with a manic pixie dream girl in an indie film.
Or on the Gilmore Girls. This is like when Garth Brooks had that song where he described him and his lady friend as being because you know they were wanted to have little ones, and he described he and his beloved as being two of a kind working on a full house. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's awesome. Why don't I ever come up with that? Also, Bill Oakley from The Simpsons, who we've had on Outlook Portland and who will undoubtedly guest on this show because he seems to be here drinking malt liquor with Sarah and Greg like 3 days a week. He wrote the best ever play on words in The Simpsons, which is where Lisa's explaining to Homer the way that she relaxes, because he's all stressed out, and she says, oh, I use a lot of things to relax. Tai Chi, Chai Tea. I mean, come on. Excellent. These are the top five most absurdly upbeat songs found on my MP3 player. Dawn Taylor, what might be next?
Number four, Madonna, Cherish. Is this the one where she's romping around in the surf in the video with
black
the mermen?
Yeah, the black and white video, and she's got the short, thatchy blonde hair.
Yeah. And there's mermen boys.
Yeah, but I always confuse that with the video for True Blue, though.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong then.
See, but see, you're doing that. See, no, but no, don't weaken.
Yeah.
Because for a minute it seemed like we had an answer. Because I always confuse this and the True Blue video. And for a minute I thought that wasn't going to happen this time, but now you're not even sure.
I'm not sure.
This is really one of the hottest phases of Madonna's career.
Yeah, she was not at all weird and offensive at that period. She was still kind of awesome.
Well, and she's just, I mean, I even find her hot when she's offensive and weird.
She's weirdly gristly now, though,
and
has that fake British accent, and she's just annoying.
Well, now she just looks pointy. She looks like she swallowed a knotted rope. I mean, the fact that you could even sing that line with a straight face. She also had the thing going on in this video where she had the blonde hair, but with sort of the black roots.
Yeah.
But in a way that was sort of not trashy.
Yeah.
Also, I think...
That was a great haircut.
Oh,
it was an awesome haircut.
Seriously, there are phases in Madonna's career, certain videos, where she was just the hottest thing on two legs, like, ever. Also, I think here she's rolling around in the surf in a tight-fitting denim dress of some kind, so that helps. She's not like a prayer hot here, but she's close. Getting really gay even for me. All right, we have to continue. These are the top five most absurdly happy songs. Not that that's going to change any. Most absurdly happy songs you will find in my MP3 player. Dawn Taylor.
Number three, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company, Goody Goody Gumdrops.
This is where that business of us broadcasting the music in mono might screw us, but...
I hear her name. Oh, she's getting sweeter, sweeter.
I have an embarrassing amount of music by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
They were great, though. They were really great.
Also, the Ohio Express.
The thing about this list is that it just gets progressively more embarrassing as it goes along.
Well, that's the whole point of a top five. Otherwise, it would just be a random conglomeration, Dawn, if it wasn't some sort of a countdown. I can't remember if this is Ron Dante singing or not. That's one of the things we're going to put on this weekend's live stream rotation is our interview with Ron Dante, who sang like... every bubblegum song you've ever heard in your life. He was actually all of the Archies, by the way. Even the female vocals are Ron Dante. I think this is him, too. It does become a little arbitrary, because I don't really know why this is happier than, like, Yummy Yummy or something. You know, or like Simon Says, but what are you going to do? They can't all be on the list, much as I would like that. These are the top five most absurdly cheery songs to be found in my MP3 player, Dawn Taylor.
See, and this is just embarrassing. Number two, Ace of Base, It's a Beautiful Life.
Well, it is. I mean, that's just true. This is one of those things where the rest of the country seems to be in this state of denial. They are pretending not to remember that they bought 15 million Ace of Base albums. I remain unashamed.
Then I thought that Ace of Base had just become a punchline and we wouldn't have to ever listen to them again.
No. You could not have seen then what has now happened. You could not have foreseen this day. But I mean, admit that this fits the criteria of the list. It's absurdly upbeat.
Sure.
Here comes the hook. They don't even make you wait for it. I remember hearing this song when it came out. This was the lead single off the Beautiful Life album, which was the follow-up to The Sign. and just and being convinced and just thinking this is the hookiest thing I had ever heard in my life. I really was legitimately surprised when this was not just a massive success. Because this, in my opinion, is a better song than either of the singles that they had off the Sign record. I almost put something by Roxette on this list. But, you know, I wanted Sweden to represent, like, regardless.
From the text box, a listener says, "You really are a metal god, Rick. I can see you in your mullet bouncing down the road in your Dodge Aspen."
Yeah. I am what I am.
Oh, Sweden.
I wonder if... If you were to go back and just sort of subtract ABBA from the gene pool, I wonder how many of these bands would just sort of, you know, like Back to the Future style, just go whoosh, and just sort of fade and just cease to exist.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, that's the reason this band exists, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like you can't, I mean, it's, the reason that Ace of Base exists, you know, that is the reason that Gene Owl novels exist. Because Tolkien's dead. And you'd rather have him, but in a pinch, you'll take her, you know? You know, I mean, she's really just like an echo of the thing you want. But you'll, yeah, I guess, you know? If he's not going to be resurrected and write any more, you know, Hobbit tales, you'll take whatever, you know, like cave bear crap she's writing. Squeeze me again in your Neanderthal grip. That's not me saying this to Ace of Base.
No.
These are the top five most absurdly happy songs that are found on my MP3 player. Don Taylor?
Number one, Love. Ting-a-ling-a-ling.
How is love spelled?
L-U-V.
That's
love.
Right. Do you know the song?
I do not.
Oh, man. Wait till you get to the hook here. It's awesome. These guys are also from Sweden. Go figure. It should be the top five things that sound as though they were found in ABBA's Foot Locker.
So far, it sounds like they could be from Japan as well. Hey, I have heard this song.
It's awesome. All right. So here comes the big hook, which is just the word ting-a-ling-a-ling. Come on, how could you be down while hearing this?
I like the little ringy sound in my right ear there, too. It's adorable. This song is adorable.
It really is. If it was...
You just want to pinch its cheeks.
I was going to say, it's just made of pink frosting and panda bears. We'll go to the chorus one more time, and then we'll just end the embarrassment here for everyone. I was actually, amusingly enough, I was turned onto the song by a writer at a company called Feral House, which is a local publishing house, a guy named who actually writes under the name of Metal Mike, and he writes a lot about heavy metal, and he loves this band. And he wrote a piece, there's a book called Bubblegum Music is the Naked Truth by Kim Fowley? No, Kim Fowley's the guy from... Kim Fowley's the Runaways manager.
Yeah.
Kim something or other was the editor at Feral House that put it together. And it was a whole book of essays about bubblegum music. And this guy, Metal Mike, who typically writes about, you know, hard rock, had written this whole piece about how Love was the greatest band in the history of the world. And I was like, I have to hear them. And then I got this record, and by God, it was freaking awesome. There we go. How great was that, Don?
That was a great song.
All right. This is all true. Join us tomorrow, and our guests will include Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. I forget what Thursday is exactly. Thursday is sort of a blur to me. Wait. No. On Friday, we'll be joined by our good friend Big Jim Willick, who many of you may remember from he was on the Marconi Show at one point on KUFO, had his own show. He does some very fine stand-up comedy. He's really one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life, and is opening for Gilbert Gottfried when he comes to the Aladdin, I think, on Saturday. So Big Jim will be in the studio with us on Friday. Tomorrow, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. We want to thank our guest, Ben Steinbauer, who is the director of the film Winnebago Man, which you really ought to see. That is playing at Cinema 21 tonight, Wednesday and Thursday. Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Sagler. Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Tuesday, August 10th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, we'll have a brief musical interlude, after which we have a Legion of News encore and the encore of today's program, also available via iTunes and in the archives at rickemerson.com. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.